So, any nervousness that I may have always dissolves when I get into the room with everyone. And it's such an honor to be here. So, Ileana, again, thank you for welcoming me. And just to give you a little bit of background on myself, I'm called Amana, though my given name at birth was Jerry Lynn, and named after my grandmother, who I didn't know, her brother Jerry, who was a notorious biracial cowboy in Texas. And everyone in my family wanted to be named after him. So there's a lot of Jerrys in the family, male and female, because he did some notorious things that, a black man and got away with it. So everybody was like, "Yay, Jerry." So that was the name I was given. I'm the daughter of Bobby Lee Brembry and Warren Nathaniel. They came to California during the Great Migration, as many of our families have done to escape the Jim Crow South. I am African American and Irish heritage on my mother's side, and African American and Indigenous Seminole heritage on my father's side. My pronouns are she and they. And among other identities, worldly identities, I belong to the LGBTQIA two-spirit community. And right now, I am a guest on the unceded territory of the Winneman Wintu and the Shastan people in the Northern California area near the Oregon border. I'm so honored to be here with you today. It's been a long time after, taking years of spiritual training through the Spirit Rock residential teacher training under the leadership of my beloved mentors, Larry Yang and Gina Sharp and Kate Lila Wheeler. 3 years of dedicated co-creating and teaching the spiritual teacher and leadership training at Spirit at East Bay Meditation Center, my home. And then last year I took the year off and for rest and restoration, which really served me well. So, after all that, I'd love to hear from everyone who would like to share through the chat a really brief sentence and just say, the gift that you bring to the Sangha today of attitude or mind state or heart resonance. And so, put it in the chat. Don't send it. We're going to blossom the chat. So take a moment. I'll give you a moment to, write that in. And don't send it until I say send. And so it'll all come through at once because we have 41 people present. So it'll be easier to do it this way. So take a moment, gather your thoughts, and prepare your offering. I see we have people from Milwaukee, New York, Sacramento, Rhode Island. Hi, Shanique. And okay, let's do it. Boom. Send it. Oh. And we have some beautiful heart qualities that are showing up here. Let me just share a few of them. Let's see where we start. I love you, Amana. I love you too, Andrea. Thank you for this Dharma talk today. Loving kindness. an attitude of abundance and joy. Beautiful. Grateful to be here, ease and clarity. Farah, the gift of community. There are at least five of us here and more coming from Albuquerque, Tiwa territories. Presence, calm, caring. My gift today is slowness. Slowness, beautiful. Let's be slow so we can take in everything. Listening quietly as opposed to busily hearing. Lovely, lovely. Love and heartfelt curiosity, gratitude to be practicing with this community. Curious. What a wonderful quality. Can we all do that? Attention, openness, spaciousness, open heart, openness, open-heartedness. Yay. Joy. Yeah, attention. And it goes on. So I encourage you, compassion. I encourage you to read through because these are wonderful. Really beautiful qualities that we're bringing to share with each other here. Yeah. Thank you all for your presence. We're going to drop into some settling and grounding. And what I would like to do is share with you, there's so many doors into our practice, into the meditation practice. And I would like to share with you one of my primary doors. I go in many different ways, but I found this way that I want to share with you today to be one that is so supportive and nourishing for my practice and easeful. And someone wrote about bringing ease. I would like to offer a way into the practice that is easeful. So what I'm going to invite you to do right now, as I kind of set this up, is to find an easeful posture. Let that be any of the postures. Even though we're on this Zoom, you know, there's sitting posture. There's standing posture, there's laying down, and there's walking. Walking might be a little distracting. So any posture that gives you the greatest access to ease, which is the natural state of the body. And as you settle in and as you hear my voice, I invite you to simply, someone said, quietly take in. To simply just quietly take in. You can close your eyes and simply hear the sound of my voice. For those of you who have a practice, I know how it is to have someone give guidance. Sometimes it can be frustrating and annoying and distracting to what you normally do. I want to invite you into beginner's mind. There may be something here for you. Hopefully it will be joyful. I'd like to begin my practice with some meditation prayer. I want to honor the ancestors of this land and the ancestors of all the lands that we live on, all unceded land. I want to call in those ancestors who have supported us, who have cared for us, who have brought us through this portal into this worldly world. I want to offer up gratitude for the earth from which we come. For the elements that we are a part of, the breath that is the air and the atmosphere, the earth that is our body, the water that flows in our body, and the fire that is in our body that allows us to digest our food, want to give appreciation and gratitude for the sun, which allows us to have sustenance grow from the earth, and for the beauty of the moon that can be so nourishing and mesmerizing to bring joy and peace and calm our families, our children, our grandchildren, all the offsprings, and those who will come. And I want to give gratitude for the privilege that we have. So often we're stuck in the marginalization of our circumstances, the oppressions. But we are all imbued with certain privileges, and it's a big, big privilege to be here to get today in Sangha. May we all have ease, and may we all have peace in our hearts. This to gladden the heart and to prepare us to drop into our internal terrain. So I invite you at this time to feel the parts of your body that are resting on a surface, and know that that surface is ultimately the earth of which you are a part. Allow the fingers of gravity to settle you down, to draw you down onto the earth, to become aware of your attachment here. Feel into that. And as you notice the touch points that are on a surface, draw the energy of the earth up into the body, through the soles of the feet, through the back of the body if you're laying down, through the thighs if you're sitting. And as you draw your awareness up, seek out any places of tightness or holding or constriction and breathe spaciousness there. See if you can identify the places that you hold, sometimes in the hips. Release the muscles of the abdomen, that place of intelligence and intuition. Notice the torso and the chest. Can you open the heart any more? Allow the shoulders to fall away from the ears, yield to gravity. The tongue rests gently in the mouth or placed behind the upper teeth, the eyes nestled in their sockets. The skin of the face and the scalp, around the ears, the flesh of the whole body resting on the architecture of your frame. Settle into this external peace and ease. And as the body settles, the mind follows. Remove any notion of what you feel you are supposed to achieve or accomplish in your meditation. Allow yourself to be in a state of receptivity, simply receiving without judgment, without comparison. And if you have an anchor, if you have an object of focus, I'm inviting you to allow your thoughts, your mind state, to be the focus, and simply notice the quality of your mind right now. What are the quality of the thoughts that may be arising and passing? As though visitors coming to the door of your home, and you standing at the gate, allowing them in the front door and out the back, but not following them in, simply letting them pass through, arise and passing away. When we do not take up the thoughts that pass through our mind, when we do not exacerbate them or stimulate them, they lose their sway. When you feel truly settled and intimate with your state of mind now, I invite you to choose an object of focus, perhaps the one you usually use, or it could be sound or sensation in the body, breath. And as thoughts arise, and they surely will, because that's what the mind does, simply continue to notice. And when awareness returns, and you notice that you're thinking, turn your full awareness to mindfulness and investigate it. What does mindfulness feel like in the body? What are the qualities of it? What does it evoke inside you? Offer it your full attention. Celebrate it. Find the joy in it. And as with anything, as you offer that attention, it stays longer and longer. And I invite you to continue to practice in this way. Know that each thought we have has a corresponding body sensation. As you notice thoughts arising, drop the story and bring your awareness to the body. And notice what may have arisen there. Tightness, shoulders rising up, the jaw, constriction in the torso. Perhaps the thought brought ease because it was joyous. In this way, we create intimacy with our bodies. We move back into the body, which is where all experience takes place. Should thoughts of joy or beauty or humor arise, drop those storylines too and notice what arises in the body. And if it is wholesome and good, allow it to expand and grow and fill your heart. To radiate into every part of your body. In this way, we cultivate beautiful qualities Very shortly, I will invite the bell and sound it three times. As you turn your awareness to sound, again, notice, investigate with curiosity the impact that it has on your body, on your heart, on your mind. Notice if there's any conditioning. Oh, it's time to come out. Notice any inclination to lean in. Pay attention and be aware. Do not let yourself be conditioned by the bell. I invite you to slowly come back to the room. Drawing in any peace and ease that you've cultivated from your practice. And I now invite you to notice any difference in when you entered the room and in your mind state now. Know for yourself the effects of this practice on your heart and on your mind. I wanted to offer this mindfulness practice of thoughts because thoughts are so powerful. And so often we're directed to go straight to the breath. For me, it's kind of the same thing that I know I'm conditioned to do, and I know that many of you are conditioned to do as well, which is to get there. I'm gonna get there, Like, let's lean into the next thing. And so for many years, I came to my practice and I just went straight to the breath with no preparation, without really understanding the connection between the mind and the body and how intricately connected it is. And ultimately, I would enter my practice with the thought of, oh, I'm gonna go for bliss. I'm gonna go for tranquility. I'm gonna go for, joy. Not realizing that just having set that goal was a hindrance, was going to prevent me from getting anywhere. So the first few years of my practice, I practiced in frustration with some little tips of, yeah, oh, that was really good. Ooh, that was a good sit. And like, ooh, these weren't good, and then characterizing all of these ways of, what's good and what's bad, but it's all good. And when we enter our practice without some preconceived notion of where we're going or what we're supposed to be doing, we enter with openness and we enter with a sense of possibility. We bring a sense of curiosity to, I wonder what is here now. Oh, that's here. Oh, that's here. It completely changes the field of our practice and brings us more into the moment. But we're in a culture of striving and we're in a culture of setting goals and planning and moving towards something always. And so bringing that sense of not preconceiving what we're supposed to be doing or where we're supposed to go, and just having an open heart and a sense of receptivity allows us to really settle into the practice because we're not reaching for anything. We're just receiving. And whatever we receive, whether it's wonderful or whether it's aversive, we still maintain this sense of curiosity and we maintain the sense of non-judgment. And we know that whatever has arisen is not who we are. And that it's something that's just passing through, just like the breath. So I did have some music that I wanted to play in between the meditation and talking. Talk, talk, talk. But we started kind of late, so I'm going to not cue that up, Ileana. But I do want to invite you to take care of yourself So we won't like have a formal break. But do take care of yourself, do what you need to do, get you some tea or some water or bio functions, whatever you need. One of my first teachers when I first started meditating at the East Bay Meditation Center was Spring Washam. And she would sit there and she would just be smiling. And then I would try to do it. And then it would just be difficult, holding my face in a smile throughout the meditation. And now I understand because the joy that I feel in being with you just put a smile on my face throughout that whole sit. And it was effortless and it was so authentic and so real. And so I really understand now how it is that you can have this sense of joy inside that just lights your whole face up. It lights your whole body up. I just wanted to share that with you as an observation because I was just so feeling all of you and feeling into the joy of being here. I'm back. I think it's 2 days. Maybe this is the third day from a month-long retreat at Spirit Rock. It was over on the third, and it was pretty amazing. And then I couldn't make it home because the roads were kind of snowed in and bad weather and rain. And, so I had to stay in the Bay Area, and I stayed where I stayed. I was surrounded in an environment of sacredness, and it kept the sacredness of my being and the sacredness of this life on my mind the whole time. And so now I'm back home, and I am committed to living my life like that. To understanding how sacred my breath is and how sacred my relationship practice is with my wife, and how sacred this environment is that I live in this land that I rest upon, that I'm a guest on. And these are things that, sometimes we forget. The real gift of this life. So I want to share a few things with you about my retreat. Actually, this is my first talk that I've done in over a year. I think the last time I taught, because I took off last year, so the last time I taught was like maybe last February or something. So I really want to just share with you my experience and with the understanding that when we're giving guidance or when we're in this role of teacher, that really the only thing that we can really teach is our embodiment, is who we are. And when I went on this retreat, when I first signed up, you have to sign up months in advance. And I knew that I had been off for a year not teaching, and I have a really wonderful retreat coming up in April for women of the Black African diaspora. I'm so excited about that. And so when I signed up for the retreat, I made the intention to use it as a preparation to like kind of revive or jumpstart or reinitiate my practice because of the intensity of being on a month long. And I encourage anyone who hasn't done it to do it. And so that was my initial intent, was kind of deepen my practice by being in an intensified refuge to practice in, and to kind of prepare my mind, to really begin to start thinking about what I wanted to offer. So I had that intent way out, months out. And then as the time got closer, I started thinking about, well, what kind of practice am I going to do when I go on retreat? And what I usually do is I do samadhi practice or a concentration practice or a practice of gathering and collecting and unifying the mind so that it's not doing what it does all the time. Flying around and jumping from one thing to the other. And going on retreat really offers you the opportunity to settle your mind. Really different. It's not so easy to do that as a householder. Not impossible, but not so easy to do it. And the benefit of that is that you gain like this clarity because you're not, you don't have these colored lenses that you're seeing through because you've settled, and those lenses have kind of settled down so that you have like this clear window that you can see through, and it allows for more wisdom to arise, for more depth of reflection, internal reflection. So I said, okay, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna do samadhi practice. And then when I got there, I was like really cruising. The first couple of days, I was like, oh, this is going to be a good retreat. Good, bad, right? And then I started jumping on these planning trains where I started like planning, the structure of the retreat and, writing Dharma talks in my head, and it was taking me away from my samadhi practice. And then I was going titrating that. I was going back and forth and back and forth, dropping into these really beautiful mind states of a collected mind, and expecting for that to continue. And then all of a sudden, I'm back into this planning. And let me tell you, the planning was joyous. It was not burdensome. But I began to feel like this conflict, like I'm trying to do my samadhi practice. And then at some point, it dawned on me that I had set the intention to prepare myself for this upcoming retreat. And that intention was there. And it was not going away. And I still had this other intention to do this like deep practice. And so they were both two trains running at the same time. And it was my expectation that I'm supposed to be doing samadhi, like on this like more current intention, that I was beginning to get this frustration. And when I realized that, the insight was the power of intention. The power of intention, the power of our thoughts, the power of our mind. I don't know if I realized how powerful the mind is. It's like, I have this electric car, and it's like a monster. it's like a really powerful machine, and I have to really like be in control of it. I mean, it will, you know, you put on the gas and zoop, it's so powerful. In the mind, I see that as an analogy for the mind. It is, if we can train our minds and wield it skillfully, there's no stopping to what we can accomplish. Setting an intention for your day, for your practice, for your life, and being committed to that intention, which is really what an intention is, it's a commitment, really allows us to create our life, to create the reality that we want to live in, regardless of what's going on around us. Now we live in a world that's a hot mess right now. I mean, really, it's always been kind of like that. You know, I mean, this is the contemporary hot mess that we're in, but you know, the reality of our existence is that we have suffering. This is the reality. But through the power of our minds is where we find freedom and liberation. And the practice of setting an intention brings us closer and closer to the way we want our life to be. And it's not a matter of, you know, setting a goal, you know, creating a strategy or creating a plan. Intention resides in this non-material place. You know, intention determines the states that are experienced by the mind. It determines that. And intention is happening every second of our lives, every second. If we didn't have intention, we would be inert. We wouldn't even move because there's an intention to even just bring the hand to the face. And it can be, it's, you know, many times it's very unconscious. So one of the things that I practiced with on retreat was noticing the subtlety of my intention. So, you know, we get up out of our chair and we just start walking without recognizing that before we got up out of the chair, there was an intention to get up. And there was an intention to lift and shift and place our foot on the ground. So I practice this. I practice really noticing intention. And one of the ways I really practice is when I was eating and being very intentional about how I was eating, picking up the fork. Let's just pretend this is the fork. Let's see. You know, picking up the fork and bringing it to my mouth, and then just listening for the intention to put it into my mouth. It was so powerful. And we have this incredible tool, our minds, to be able to create beautiful thoughts, to be able to create our lives through how we think. So when we go back to wise intention, it's a really crucial aspect of mind cultivation. Because the only freedom that there's going to be is internal. Otherwise, we're even trapped in the confines of our rib cage and our heart beating. The only real liberation is right here. Our thoughts are conditioning our actions. So it's so important to cultivate wise thoughts, to cultivate thoughts of non-harming that move us away from, some of our conditioning around, well, this person did this thing to me, and I'm not going to be with them anymore, and I don't like them, and I don't want them to be happy. We have all that. I want them to suffer, and we have all that. And when we have those thoughts, we bring those things into fruition because of the power of our intention. And we don't have to speak it. We don't have to even act it. But just the simple fact that we have those thoughts, those unskillful thoughts, has an impact. It has an impact in our bodies. It has an impact in our minds. And it has an impact in the world. Because speaking it or not, it comes out in our actions, in our relationships to each other. One of the things I realized when I was on retreat is how cranky I am. Ooh, it was like, really? And it showed up in like these like so like oh. These ways, and judgmental, why did they take so long to get their food? How come they got to sit right there? We're in silence. Oh, you just gonna sit right in front of me? I mean, it was like just going on and on and on. And I, brought my awareness to how I was and realize that that crankiness and that judgmentalness and that comparative mind was actually in silence affecting my experience of being in relationship to the rest of the people on the retreat. The power of the mind and the power of intention. And so one of the things that I did, which I have been doing for years, is I turned my practice to metta. I finally dropped, the striving for samadhi because, striving is a problem, in itself. And it's something that we're conditioned to do. We're conditioned to get the thing done. There's no reward for setting the intention and letting it go, and then allowing the mystery of what's going to show up in our lives. There's, we don't, socially, culturally, we don't get any reward for that. It's like, did you get the job done? What are your deliverables? That's where we are, To be able to like just bring our minds to a place of kindness. And that's what I did. I practice metta, loving kindness, and I made my practice compassion. These two beautiful qualities, two of what are called the heavenly abodes, the Brahmaviharas. It alters you. Over time, it alters you. It brings you to a deeper place of being able to accept people as they are. And that doesn't mean complacency. It just means seeing them clearly. You know, those in the world who are doing harm in the world, seeing that they're broken, seeing our own brokenness to the harms that we do. You know, we're the pirate. You know, we're the robber in many, many ways. And so, you know, by bringing our hearts into a place of loving softness, we're really able to cultivate compassion, even for those that, you know, we would really, really want to hate, right? We'd like, I'm not feeling you. I'm not thinking about you. You need to be off of the planet. Those thoughts generate something in the world. And so, you know, when we think about this path of wisdom towards liberation, the Eightfold Path, we come to the triad, or actually this dual. Dual is not a good word either. This section of the Eightfold Path, that's wisdom, and it's imbued with understanding. Understanding that people are broken, understanding that there's suffering in the world. There has always been suffering. Understanding that this realm that we live in is one of suffering. And then allowing that understanding to influence our intentions, to influence our thoughts. As we cultivate like this triad of moral factors, ethical factors, which are speech and our actions. And something that can get really hard is our livelihood. You know, so many of us in so many ways, I hate to say it, but you know, we collude with our own oppression because of the livelihoods that we are either forced to do or we have chosen to do. And many times there's some reflection that needs to happen there and some renunciation of the benefits that may come from that livelihood and the detriments that we may be contributing to. All wrapped up in our survival. But cultivating these ethical qualities, cultivating this sense of non-harming is where we base wise intuition and wise intention on. And then our efforts, the meditation aspect of the path, the samadhi, the concentration, the benefit of that being to create an internal environment that is unshielded and de-veiled so that we can see clearly. So, you know, I kind of, you know, went over some of the, you know, I just really wanted to share some of the things that showed up for me on my retreat. Which was really transformative for me. Even though I have practiced metta for myself over the years, I could also see how I still am working with self-love. I could still see how, my deficiency in being able to have beautiful self-regard affects my relationships in the world and how I see people, my grumbling and, displeasure with how people are. People were just how they are. And my understanding of the power of my mind. So our practice is training our minds towards wholesome qualities. So I think that, I think I'd like to open it up. I've talked about a few things now, and I'm wondering if folks would like to share maybe your own reflections, if there's any questions that you have about what I've shared here from my practice or from the guidance that I gave earlier. Also, possibly how that guidance settled in your body, if insights came through. So questions, reflections, insights are all welcome. And so if you do want to bring your voice into the room, and I would love to hear it, please use the hand raise function. I think that just got dropped in. It's at the bottom of your screen. And if your screen is all the way open, you'll see where it says hand raise. And yes, please come forward. I'd love to hear your reflections, your experiences. Luana.
Mute. Hi. Thank you so much for the words, for the wisdom, for the presence. I love that you can share that on an online setting in such a beautiful way. The power of intention. This is so deep for me right now. It brings up a lot of fear and a lot of self-doubt when I'm setting intentions and watching them unfold and staying in this place of what you mentioned, of training my mind for wholesome thoughts and just like meeting my humanity over and over and over, and the lack of acceptance over certain unskillful patterns of my mind. And from that, it springs all kinds of unhelpful behavior that I'm hoping to find community, and then share a little bit more about it, because I could deeply resonate with what you said. It's it goes back into the intention, and when I'm creating some place of doubt around that, it ends up then wrapping up everything else, and then I feel like I go on a spiral. So I don't know if I have a specific question more than a reaction to what I heard and how it's resonating in my body. I feel like my belly feels really tense because I've been doing some work into setting intentions and then watching them unfold in a way that's completely out of my control. As far as like relationships and wanting to connect with people and wanting to do work out in the world on a personal and professional level. So I just want to thank you. And wow, just like this bringing back into the importance of the intention and how it shapes everything else, my capacity to participate, and how powerful it is to train the mind in that aspect is just really powerful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Luana. You know, the thing that stands out about your share that I would like to speak to is what you said about the lack of acceptance of over unskillful thoughts that show up or whatever feels unskillful. And, you know, it's kind of like we shoot the second arrow at ourselves, you know, because we are conditioned beings, you know, biologically, psychologically, you know, we are taught these behaviors from the time we come out of the womb. And the recognition that we have an unskillful thought or an unskillful action is something really to be celebrated, that we recognized it. Because at the point of that awareness, we have a choice. And we can massage it and redo it over and over again. And we may continue to have those same unskillful thoughts or reactions or actions in the world. But you know, like, conditioning is deep and it's layered. So I feel that the when we move into not accepting this is the way we are, but we want to be different, that kind of loathing, you know, really is not helpful on our path. And so my invitation is to really, like, oh, that's in place for a reason. And now I see you, Mara. I see you. And, you know, we can dance. So, you know, everything on the path is a moment to wake up. Every moment on the path, everything. So thank you so much. Thank you. Insomega, is that you?
Hi.
Yeah.
Nice to see you. Hello, hello, Woo-hoo. Hello. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences, being willing to be vulnerable about some of the processes you went through. I was very intentional about doing this meditation today, and very intentional about a lot of different things today. And I noticed how easily I got distracted and off track. Like, just the text from my partner around something she wants me to do completely threw me off track. And next thing you know, I'm planning about how am I going to do that? How am I going to do that when I'm trying to do this? And I realized that, you know, what is it about intention that says, what's the message around that for myself? Like, why do I feel like I can't have an intention without helping other people out? Or, like, why do I always include others in my attention or easily get distracted by other people's needs? So that's kind of what I'm working on right now. I've been writing for a while, and I noticed that, you know, unless I turn everything off and I tell people 10 to 1, I'm not talking to you, whatever, I got to do this. There's a little guilt that comes up, like, oh, I'm not helping others, or I'm not doing this, I'm being selfish, I'm taking time for myself. Like, so that's what I'm working with around intention right now. And just your share really brought up how, like, big that is for me. And I realized, oh, that has a lot to do about how I feel about just taking space and place and doing me without having to take care of others. So thank you so much. And thank you for letting me share.
Oh,
praises.
You,
praises.
You're welcome. So full of wisdom. So full of wisdom. You just drop some wisdom down on us all. Yes. Thank you. You know, there's a sense of self-regard that that needs to be cultivated, because we are in a culture that says to us we're not enough, you know, that we have to do more, that we have to be more. And Tricia Hersey has a book called Rest is Resistance. What a radical idea. Not striving, not doing 100 things at once, mastering the art of, you know, doing 5,000 things at one time. Like, that's like some, you know, heavy duty, like, wonderful thing. But resting and taking our own care. Taking care of ourselves, you know, taking care of our hearts first, you know, because the truth is, if we don't have it for ourselves, we really aren't giving it to anyone else. We may be performing it, but we're really not giving it up, because it has to come from in here. It has to. Trinity, I see you. Please unmute.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you. I've just wanted to share that the picture came to me of standing in the kitchen holding a baby while stirring the soup. So I grew up in a family of 13. I was number six. So I had babies and adults and everybody around me. And I bring this up to share the fact that while going through this meditation, I've been deeply following the body, watching it relax. You know, when you say to somebody, relax and take a breath, I can actually feel myself and see the body, the muscles just relax. And so it's been in a constant state of relaxation, keeping unwinding. And then I thought, oops, I'm not supposed to be doing that. And then the picture of standing, holding the baby while, you know, calming the baby down, or while the baby's sleeping and stirring the soup, is what, that's perfectly fine to watch the body relax while listening at the same time. Because I've been, you know, I had a I had a discussion with myself about multitasking yesterday, and I thought, well, I hear that you're not supposed to multitask, do more than one thing at a time, especially since we've been training about mindfulness was in that direction, and I couldn't find myself doing that, you know. And I thought, okay, I'm not doing it that way. That way in which the teacher said, do this, but don't do that. Don't do anything else. And then I keep coming back to the picture of stirring the soup. You got a lot of kids to serve. You got to take care of everybody at the same time. You don't just hold the baby and let the soup not be cooked. It's stupid. So then I thought, okay, I multitasking according to who is what. And I thought, put that out of your mind and just be okay with what you're doing and with what, you know, if you're an octopus with eight hands, you're going to do this. Why not? So that's what I wanted to share.
Thank you so much, Trinity. And what a beautiful metaphor. And stirring the soup and holding the baby and comforting the baby is all the same thing, really. It's all taking care. It's all mindfully taking care. So, when I think about multitasking, I think about, talking on the phone while you're looking at the TV, while you're trying to write a note, things that are like in the service of striving for something, trying to get somewhere, trying to accomplish something. Taking care of the baby is so essential. Stirring the soup is so essential. I'm really happy that you shared that. Thank you so much. Beautiful. So, you know, we're coming up on the end of our time. Again, it's been really wonderful being here with you. And I'm really appreciating the ease that I have, because I can get really nervous about, like, being on the spotlight or whatever. And this has been really wonderful, you know, my family, my community. So thank you for your kind attention and for your presence and for your practice. And I would like to bring the merit now. So today we have generated good deeds that entitle us to a spiritual reward. As an act of generosity, we offer the merit generated from our actions today to radiate outward into the world at large and to land upon and rest with those less fortunate than we are. May it reach its long tentacles through the illusion of space between all that there is and defeat the enemy of wrongdoing. May it land in the hearts and minds of those who are steeped in suffering, those who are stalked and hunted, those who are hungry and imprisoned in the trance of ignorance. We offer the fruits of our merit to all living beings who crawl on the earth, swim in the waters of this world, fly and hop and walk and climb, and those who see without eyes and hear without ears. We offer the merit of our practice to all creatures above us, below us, to the right and left, in front and behind, to the seen, to the unseen, the known, the unknown, and the unknowable. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you all. Go well into the world. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.